So we are with Frank Lopez from SomMedia.tv and movie maker of the movie Ansif. Hey Frank, you just came here to present your movie Friday, May 6th at L'Elysée 900 Ontario East.
Yeah, but I'm also here to help launch the Montreal Media Co-op.
So we'll begin by listening to Ansif, the short trailer.
In a world on the brink of ecological Armageddon, where runaway climate change unleashes chaos on human populations, where the solutions to our crisis are sold in retail outlets and shopping malls.
By taking that one roll and buying that one roll, you can help save millions of trees.
One man's formula to solve humanity's greatest challenge is to bring down civilization.
They're thinking of raising the Shasta Dam in California, and the reason that Senator Feinstein gave was, it is Californians' God-given right to water their lawns. There is no way to argue with that, except with explosives.
Now, in history's darkest hour, a resistance movement is born to defend our world and put an end to civilization. Before civilization ends us. From submedia.tv and Civ.
Last trailer you made for Ansif?
Yeah, basically wanted a completely over-the-top Hollywood-style trailer, so I stole the music from the Batman, one of the Batman movie trailers, and then I read the script, like one of those over-the-top movie announcers, and just wanted to make it funny, and I think a lot of people didn't get it.
Didn't get it in which sense?
I don't know. I think that there's a lot of Derek Jensen fans out there who take themselves too seriously, right? And I think that a lot of them have been anticipating this movie for a while. And so maybe they expected something a little more serious, a little somber, a little sad. I don't know. But I just really wanted to get this trailer to the people who are not Derek Jensen fans, you know, to people who might be like, what the hell is this? You know, I'm a little curious about this. I want to check this out. And so after I had that trailer up for a few months, I did some other ones that are a little more serious to chill those people out.
Yeah, and also like that attract many other people, as I feel, because I show this trailer many times to many people, and like that's going to touch the people who are not like the philosopher or theorist or are not like intellectuals.
Yeah, I mean that is basically the point of a lot of the media that I do is to try to, one, create humor out of really horrible situations, but two, that, you know, we need to sort of expand a little bit beyond our activist ghettos here.
We are today focusing on Ansif. Can you talk about where came from this project?
Yeah, I was working for Democracy Now! In New York City in 2005. And that was the first time I saw Derek Jensen speak. I saw him speak at a peak oil conference. And he basically spoke like nobody else in that conference. You know, most of the people in that conference were really concerned with escaping to the countryside and saving their own butts. And Derek was talking about confronting the corporations, confronting the power sources that are destroying nature and the planet. And it blew my mind because I've never really heard somebody speak so bluntly, especially in a post 9/11 world where activists are being, you know, rounded up and thrown in jail for, you know, numerous different things. And Derek was pretty blunt and pretty honest about, you know, what we need to do to stop, well, basically to save nature. And so at the end of the talk, I just went and talked to him, and I'm like, we got to make a movie about this man, seriously. And so we started the conversation, and the next year I started shooting. So it took me like 4 or 5 years to do this.
But how you get first to Derek Jensen?
How did I get to him?
Yeah.
basically in person, you know, that day at the conference. I just went I went up to him after the talk. People were there to sign their books, and I just, you know, I bought one of his books, and I stood in line, and when it was my turn to get it signed, I just basically said, like, I need to talk to you about this. We need to make a movie. And he was like, okay, let's start the conversation.
But before, you was also attracted by those kind of ideas, because you get to this point to meet him so fast. That's like an expression that you was already, on some ways, having those ideas in yourself.
Yeah, I think that what Derek has done for me and for many other people is that he has basically more eloquently put what a lot of us have been feeling, right? Like, you know, this system is not working. This system is not redeemable. This system is enslaving us and destroying what we need to live. And we need to destroy the system. And that's basically what it comes down to, right? He does that in a fantastic way. And the Endgame books, which is what I'm basing this movie on, are about 1,000 pages collectively. It's two books, but they're fantastic. And he's one of the best people to sort of break down things in a way that it's easy, but it also makes a whole lot of sense. I can't even what I try to do with the film was sort of bring his ideas to life, but in the end, what I want, the goal of the movie is to get people to read the books, because I can't possibly do what Derek did in those books. They're amazingly brilliant, but I'm hoping that people see the movie and get really interested and just pick up the books.
Yeah, because a lot of people will not read this book because they are maybe too complex for some people who are not used to read, and that's not so much an habit right now to read like long books. So to have this movie and screening this movie all over the place can like help to people to get to those discussions. And that's what you are doing right now, and since a while you're touring in North America, and before you was touring with Text Dialogic in Mexico.
Yeah.
Can you talk about all those tours?
Yeah, so the Mexico tour, I initially didn't want to, I wasn't planning on going to tour entire Mexico. What I really wanted to do was just go to the COP16 Climate Summit in Cancun and bring my film there and basically show it to the people, the main audience that I intended this film for, which is mostly environmental activists who understand what's happening, but also understand that the tactics that the environmental movement have been failing at protecting nature. And so I have mentioned this to a friend of mine who lives in Mexico City, and he said, like, well, if you're going to go to Cancun, I'm gonna book you a tour through like three other cities in Mexico. And I was like, interesting. And so I agreed, but I was a little apprehensive because Mexican people are already resisting. Mexican people already understand this. It's us here in North America who are sort of like, you know, there is resistance here, but not to the extent that that we see, like, mostly in the third world. And so I didn't feel qualified to go down there and show a film to people who already get this. And it went really well, like, way better than I expected. People were very happy that there's other people in North America who share their point of view. And sometimes they told me that they feel that people in North America are not acting or they're alone. I mean, that people in Mexico feel alone and like in the struggle, and it was really inspiring for them to see this film. So I did that tour with Testament to the Logic of Tester Logic, and it was also great because they had just gotten their charges around the G20 stayed. So the very first show they did, because they had these conditions regarding to their G20 trial that did not allow them to see each other, talk to each other, make music, do shows. And so their very first show together was in Mexico City after the G20. So that was fantastic. They're a couple awesome guys, and they'll be releasing their CD in less than a couple of weeks in Toronto. And I'm going to be doing a screening of my film the same night that they do their release. So we'll do the screening, and then we'll run over to their party and rock out with them.
Yeah, and you have a close relationship with this group.
Yeah, I mean, what I do in Submedia TV and the type of videos that I do, I consider them my musical counterpart, right? Like, they are unabashedly anarchists, and they're basically talking about insurrection in no uncertain terms. And to me, it's like sort of like some of that fuel, that cultural fuel that just keeps me going.
Just before going maybe to another clip, maybe we can talk more about what is Ansive. Like, what are the basic principles, what you are showing by this movie? What is the depth of this movie?
Well, in the Endgame books, Derek lays out the premises of the books up front. So he basically has 20 premises that he's going to lay out. And they're all important premises, I believe, but I chose four. Mainly the first one being the most important one, which is that civilization is not and can never be sustainable. And I use that as a starting point because most of the work that Derek does, similar to John Zerzan and other anti-civilization philosophers, is basically a critique of civilization. So I lightly touch upon that, not probably as much as I would have wanted to, because you can certainly make a whole film just on the basic premise of criticizing civilization. I mean, the main premise is that civilization is eating up nature faster than nature can replenish itself. So when you live in a finite planet and you are eating the resources faster than the resources can replenish themselves, then you're going to end up eating all the resources and have nothing left. And what that means is certain death. Like, there's no two ways around it. So I think that's a pretty easy one to sort of explain without having to go into all the really detailed critiques of civilization, you know, the birth of agriculture and division of labor and the creation of property and all these different things that create, you know, the mess that we're in today. But I kind of use it as a jumping off point. And then I go on to sort of exemplify this by talking about more specifically clear cuts or basically the clear cutting of trees. And I use the example of British Columbia where I live, but also the tar sands in Alberta. But also there's other premises too on how this civilization is based on and cannot continue to survive without the use of widespread violence. So I basically visually interpret that. But I also do a pretty pointed critique of the modern environmental movement, taking a clear aim at a Greenpeace. But I also as well do a critique of pacifism as the only tool that is allowed by within the system to actually fight for freedom or for nature or whatnot. And so I do a not necessarily a critique of pacifism, but the dogmatic approach in which leftists sort of use pacifism to quell any sort of conversation about going beyond pacifism. And I use a tremendous amount of people in the film to sort of make Derek's points. You know, I have Peter Gelderloos, who wrote How Nonviolence Protects the State. My comrade, Gord Hill, who wrote 500 Years of Indigenous Resistance. John Zerzan is in the film. Lear Keith, Eric McBay. I mean, it's like over 20 people that I've interviewed to sort of make this a pretty diverse document.
What is particularly interesting also is like how you talk about India.
Yeah.
Like with our Job Grewal and other people who are coming from India, who are like questioning this myth of Gandhi.
Yeah, I felt that was really important because I can relate to it because I used to be those people. I used to be like, no, you can't talk about anything. You know, Gandhi was able to kick out the British Empire from India by purely nonviolent means, and in the end, that's a lie. You know, there were many other elements within the Indian resistance that resisted in different ways that were not pacifist. And I think that the powers that be really like that myth because it keeps us from seeing the possibilities of where we can take our resistance, right? And so they have created this myth that enables managers within the leftist movements to sort of self-police how far movements can actually go. And it's pretty clear. I mean, you can see it like last year during the G20. You can see it last year during the Olympics. You can see all the denunciations of the RBC firebombing. In the Canadian context, it couldn't be more clear how this sort of plays itself out, right?
In that sense, did you read the false communique from the Defenders of the Land?
Yeah, the apology.
Yeah, this apology was wrote by other people than the defenders of the land.
Yeah, it took me a second to sort of realize that it was a parody. But yeah, I did read it.
Because that maybe also like related with what you were saying. Like, I think you have a clear link. So maybe you want to comment on that?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I don't know that much about defenders of the land and what their stance is. I know that my comrade Gord Hill has a critique of them. But I've not done enough research on them to actually do an informed commentary on them. What I can do talk about is that, you know, again, last year, many of our comrades did fantastic, courageous actions in multiple parts of Canada. And the Canadian left, mostly a white middle class left, were falling over each other to denounce these things, to make big public pronouncements about how they thought these things were disgusting, how these things were counterproductive, at some points calling for people to be arrested. And, you know, I think that these are the same folks who promote this whole idea of solidarity when they themselves don't know what this word means. At the same time, these folks see uprisings that use violence in Egypt and Northern Africa and Libya and elsewhere, and they are quick to organize solidarity marches and solidarity actions, which is, you know, it's one of those things that Ward Churchill sort of talks about, is that, you know, people in the first world love to see armed resistance or radical resistance in the third world, but when it happens in their own turf, they don't really like it, right? So I thought that was really interesting. The same characters that were denouncing, you know, minimal things like smashing of windows would, you know, raise their fists towards people who are fighting the cops in the streets of Cairo and setting the headquarters of Musharraf's party on fire.
I'll play in a song from your counterpart. So that's the logic, conspiracy rap.
This is the face of public enemy number one. Hip-hop duo test their logic. It's a Canadian anarchist rap group.
Spelled wrong, by the way.
These self-styled anarchists believe in delivering their message more forcefully. Behind the black masks, who are they really?
Conspiracy rap, intentions ain't masked, and we're counseling you to fight back. Attack, 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 attack. Left the logic is back, conspiring on a track. Conspiracy rap, intentions ain't masked, and we're counseling you to fight back. Attack, 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 attack. Test the logic is back, conspiring on a track. Listen up, y'all, you hear these lyrics, they the reason I get ceaseless business. Revolutionary rap, this ain't no gimmick, we don't just talk about it, we fucking live it.
Crash the meeting.
Damn right I did it, and I do it again. I dare you to bring it. Not intimidated or timid, we're in it to win it, and we're winning. Crashing capitalism, and I'm singing on its grave, dancing on its deathbed, dreaming of a day where everybody gets fed, scheming up a way of slicing off the snake's head, screwing up the billionaires if they don't wanna break bread. Class war till every head of state's dead, and society is stateless, classless. Clean water in everybody's glasses, shelter for the masses, community in action, love and compassion. A new world, just imagine, we can build it now while we tear apart the last one. That way we'll be more prepared when the crash comes. We can take the streets, we don't ever need to ask them. We can roll deep, camouflage black masking. We can fight authority till every flag's blackened. We can take our freedom back with action. All day I conspire to make it happen.
Conspiracy rap, intentions ain't masked, and we're counseling you to fight back. Attack, 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 attack. Test the logic is back, conspiring on a track. Conspiracy rap, intentions ain't masked, and we're counseling you. Attack, 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 attack. Test the logic is back.
conspiring on a track.
We're master outlawed, only outlaws will wear them. Conspiracy rap, cause the people we're preparing for warfare. A liberation we're declaring. Our right to fight against the enemy apparent. Robber Barons, Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, Rothschild family. They call us a conspiracy, what a theory. To all those that can hear me, I counsel with intentions, and that's why they fear me clearly. Get your people in the streets, slay the beast, middle finger to the police, the bank and the leases, once for ceases. Smash your government to pieces, till the theft of native land on Turtle Island ceases. Never give up, never stop, until we're deceased. To all our comrades behind bars are free and released. Still in the streets, still, no justice, no peace. In the belly of the beast, of victory and their defeat.
Conspiracy rap, intentions ain't mass, and we're counseling you to fight back. Attack, 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 attack. Set the logic is back, conspiring on a track. Conspiracy rap, intentions ain't mass, and we're counseling you to fight back. Attack, 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 attack. Test the logic is back, conspiring on a track.
Yo, testament,
yeah.
These words are a code. Let the mics explode and reload on these fascist foes. Yo, a logic, we got this, you already know. All out when we roll, murder them with the flow. You know these lyrics, they can't be controlled. Fuck the infiltrators, burn down COINTELPRO. And burn the prisons, yeah. Let everyone go. Conspire to liberate everyone's soul. Conspire, conspire, this lyric is fire. The fuel, the blood, sweat, tears, and desire. Passion enables action, those that act I admire. It's to a dot of the wire against the agents they hire. Courage, a strong heart is all that's required. The rebels in the belly of the evil empire. Loud like the riots that this music aspires to. These tunes we conspire.
Conspiracy rap, intentions ain't mass, and we're counseling you to fight back. Attack, 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 attack. Set the logic is back, conspiring on a track. Conspiracy rap, intentions ain't mass, and we're counseling you to fight back. Attack, 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 attack. Test the logic is back, conspiring on a track.
So that was Conspiracy Rap by Test the Logic. We're still with Frank Lopez. We're still on Security 90.3 FM. That's the buzzer of a cell phone. That's a yeah. That's a question sometimes people ask, because like the movies are like very well done and it's very high tech on some way, and it's like a bit contrasting with the content. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think in terms of, okay, I think where you're getting at this. I get this question a whole lot while I've been on the road, mostly like, how can you be against civilization and make a film that you need computers and cameras and all these artifacts of industrial civilization? And, you know, I didn't create this world. I didn't create the language of mass media, but it's a language that people understand. What I tell people is that if I felt that most people would understand this message by smoke signals, and I'll probably be doing that. But that's, you know, unrealistic. And, you know, honestly, it's a pretty bad joke. But, yeah, this is a medium. Video is a medium that is very useful. And if done properly, you can actually reach, you know, a whole lot of people. So, you know, I'm not going to fool myself. You know, it is what it is. I've recently put the film online for free so that I can actually get two more people that I can do, like, on a tour. I was doing the math the other day, and I've been on the road for 3 months, and I've probably reached maybe about 3,000 people on this tour in 3 months of, you know, hardcore traveling, you know, stuff that's really hard on your body, you know, not getting a lot of sleep, a lot of driving, a lot of Q&As, you know, it's very exhausting work, and that's 3,000 people roughly. In 3 days since I put the film on, I've reached 4,000 people So, you know, it's actually kind of frustrating in a sense, but I do understand that it's very necessary to sort of do these talks and these conversations and sort of get people in this mode where they are comfortable talking about these things. Because in the end, you know, as a secondary goal of this film, the first one being send people to Derek's books, is to get people talking, amongst themselves and speaking about things honestly, you know, not in a way where you're trying to win an argument, but in a way in which you are really honestly trying to figure out, like, well, if this culture is destroying the planet, what are we going to do to stop this culture from destroying it?
A big part of your inspiration for this movie, on the positive sense, like how some struggles can be efficient against the environmental destruction, are coming from indigenous people. Can you talk about that more?
Honestly, a lot of my work over the past 5 years has been informed by the fact that I've been living in Vancouver and that the activist community there has big links with the indigenous community more than any other place that I lived in my life. And that's really informed my work. And through that, I met this amazing man. His name is Quatsinas, or his name was Quatsinas. He is a Nuhak, or was a Nuhak, hereditary chief, and the Nuhak live in the central coast of BC. And the Nuhak have been fighting this battle for years to protect what Westerners or settlers call the Great Bear Rainforest, what these folks call their sacred, you know, their sacred grounds, sacred trees. And I went to Pelakula to visit Quatsinas, and it just really hit home. Like, I visited Pelakula, and I also visited Bella Bella. And what hit home for me was not only that the trees were being destroyed, but that I saw how, for instance, how Quatsinas lived. You know, he was subsistence fisherman and hunter, and all his food came from the land. But that's not a reality for most people there, just because the salmon stocks are going down. You know, a lot of the wildlife is escaping or leaving the area because of the logging. And a lot of people, you go to their kitchens, and what they have is canned vegetables and canned meat, you know, really terrible quality food that travel hundreds and sometimes thousands of miles to reach their plate, food that they're not used to eating, you know, white bread, for instance. These folks didn't need any of this stuff. These folks didn't need money until civilization arrived at their doors. And that really where I understood. I understood that this civilization has created mechanisms to keep us disconnected from the land, keep us disconnected from each other, and keep us disconnected from, especially from what's real. Our personal relationships are totally messed up. We're completely alienated. And you go to a place like Pelakula, where even though their people have been trampled for hundreds of years, they still have that sense of community, and, you know, they still share their resources, and they're trying, you know, even though it's becoming increasingly hard, they're trying to live the way that they've always lived. And it's really important to give these folks a megaphone, because they're still here, and these are the folks who better than anybody understand how it is to live in their particular areas, in their particular land. They know those lands. They've been living there for tens of thousands of years without abusing nature the way that this culture has abused nature. And so I gave a megaphone to a heck of a lot of indigenous folks in my film, and I'm very happy that I did so.
Can you talk also about the Oka crisis, or the so-called Oka crisis, the Battle of the Mohawks in 1990 around here?
Yeah, I felt that was an incredible example, because not only is it an amazing tale of folks who you know, have this deep relationship with those pines that were going to be destroyed to create a golf course, but that it happened in North America. A lot of people can't imagine those things happening here, and that happened not too far, I guess, from where we are right now. And one aspect that I didn't really put in the film that I really, in retrospect, should have put is that the folks in Oka tried everything nonviolently first, and they were ignored. And to them, those trees, like a woman in the film says, her quote is, And I have to thank you for this because you're the one who pointed this out to me. We treat these trees and the land like our mother. These people are raping our mother. What will you do if they rape your mother? And I think that's basically, that sums it up. You know, we are seeing nature, which is our mother, our caregiver, our provider, being raped and brutalized and murdered. And we're not doing anything about it. And we need to look at nature as that, because that's basically what nature is.